Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today on This Needs to Be Said. Our friend, attorney Peter Daigle, is coming to help us with some more bankruptcy knowledge. Hey, Peter, how are you?
Hey, good, Catherine. Thanks for asking. I'm looking forward to today.
Yeah. So we got a few questions for you on today, and I'm just going to jump right into them. The first one is, can I be denied the act of filing bankruptcy?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, I said the act, I cleaned this question up a little bit, but can anyone be denied filing bankruptcy?
So there's two things in bankruptcy to consider. One is the filing of the case, but second is what's called the discharge or the completion of the case. So more people can file cases than receive discharge, but since you've asked the question, filing, you can file for bankruptcy, but you have to have lived in the state that you're filing in for most of the last 6 months. So if you lived in your state for at least 90 days plus a day, or the better part of 6 months, you would qualify to file in that state. If you hadn't, you'd have to wait for the residency requirement, or you'd have to go back to the state from which you came from. That's one requirement of actually filing. You also may not be able to file if you received a discharge in Chapter 7 in the previous past 8 years. So if you have a previous case that you're subject to, or you were subject to, that you may not be able to file because of that. And those are the two reasons why you would not be able to file your case. As to whether or not you could receive a discharge or not, not everybody gets a discharge. Certain types of debts are not dischargeable.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, student loan debt, or if you had hit somebody in a motor vehicle accident while intoxicated, that debt may not be discharged. So that's a whole other issue as to whether or not it's dischargeable or not. But in terms of filing goes, as long as you're a resident and you've not had a previous bankruptcy, then you would qualify for filing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what is an automatic stay? What does that mean?
Automatic stay means that it means just what it means, like stay. And so nobody can take continued action towards you. So if you have a lawsuit going on, the automatic stay means that it automatically stays all lawsuits and collection matters. So if somebody's trying to garnish your wages, or if the IRS is trying to take your tax refund, or if you've got any type of collection activity, even phone calls from creditors, all those types of activities are stayed and stayed automatically as a result of the bankruptcy filing. And the bankruptcy court will send notices to all of your creditors, and all those creditors will then be stayed from you know, continuing to call you or you know, or any litigation at all.
Mm-hmm. What is meant when the term cash collateral is being used?
Well, cash collateral is a term that's used in Chapter 11s, not in consumer bankruptcies.
Okay.
So what it does, what it means just essentially is it allows a business to continue operating because they put up cash to make sure that they continue to operate. So it's used to protect creditors, but that's for an ongoing business. It would not be for individuals.
It wouldn't be for individuals. Okay, so that's something
Only for businesses that try to operate. They have to put up cash as collateral to make sure that they can pay for their, you know, pay for their financing to continue to operate the business.
I see. Okay. What are binding effects of bankruptcy plans? So I'm asking this question. It came to me. I have no idea what it means, so I don't even know if I'm asking that in the right tone as I'm reading it.
Well, I think what they're referring to a plan is either a Chapter 13 plan or a Chapter 11 plan. And we'll skip over Chapter 11 because those are for corporations.
Mm-hmm.
What a Chapter 13 plan is, it's a plan on how you're going to get out of your debt and the debt that's not dischargeable. So if you owe your bank for your mortgage, let's say 6 months of payments, that's something that would not be discharged in the bankruptcy. And so you have to come up with a plan. And the plan would be, well, I'm going to pay it over 3 years or over 5 years. So the plan means that it's how you're going to repay your creditors, and mainly those creditors that cannot be discharged. And so the plan is sent to all the creditors, and they have an opportunity to object to the plan. And then if as long as there's no objections, then the judge would sign off and say, okay, that plan's good, meaning that you can pay the bank over a certain time, you can pay the IRS, over a certain time. You can pay your ex-wife or child support over a certain period of time. It's that plan that allows you to work your way out of the, out of your debt.
Okay.
That's what's meant by a plan.
Okay. And what is meant by a non-debtor grantor?
So what a non-debtor guarantor basically is, it's a co-signer. Okay, so if you can't get a car loan and you go to your mom and say, Mom, will you sign my, co-sign my car loan? Non-debtor means non-bankruptcy. Debtor is a term for a bankruptcy, individual bankruptcy, so non-debtor. And a guarantor is basically a co-signer is what it is. So what happens is that the non-debtor guarantor still has to pay. So if the person who files the bankruptcy as a co-signer, the co-signer is stuck, basically, is what that means.
Well, that's why a lot of people avoid trying to co-sign for other people.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
With the questions that we've asked here for today, one thing is just like there's a lot involved. So depending on what a person's situation is, there's a lot that you have to know, to think, to be able to help them navigate through. But how often do you see these types of scenarios come through your office that you're working with people? And I'm asking more so like, do you see them as a combination or are they single, like ask these individual questions?
Yeah, they're like traps for the unwary, okay? And there's dozens of traps out there. And you've raised today, you know, a few of them. And it, what it sort of does is just give some examples of how bankruptcy is a process where you really should have an attorney on, because it's talking about making plans to pay back the IRS, or what do I do with my sister and my husband who co-signed something for me. And so these are raising issues that aren't going to be found by just looking on Google. In other words, you've got to really have somebody who's experienced in it and who can take your case in the totality. In other words, the entire circumstance of it, like going to a doctor where he can do all these tests and make decisions based upon everything he sees, not just one certain thing. So the questions you've asked today are examples of things that require, you know, an attorney to really figure out.
Yeah, because you can definitely Google, and I tried to be smart and Google a little bit so I can have this conversation with you and sound intelligent. And even with the one about binding effects, I was like, I don't even know if I'm asking that with the right information.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I don't know, because you look and, yeah, you can, you know, diagnose your problem with Google if you want to, but then you left that, then you still really don't know. Can I just have where I'm trying to keep my house or my car or it's I don't want to make people feel like it's just too complicated, but I think it's too important of a situation to try to do it on your own. So,
it's like Googling, I have a headache. Try Googling that headache, put that in Google, and try letting Google diagnose what your problem is. Good luck, right? So,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same thing where you're just going to get too much information coming at you. Then the information is going to be
gonna
way too generic. You're going to end up with a headache.
With something that makes me itch. And
exactly, right? Exactly. You're going to have all kinds of stuff.
I'm going to have all kinds of diagnoses.
then if you didn't have a headache, you're really going to have one, because you're going to be so worried about what you got, and that's not going to be anything to do with it, right?
Yeah, I think I did have that. I think I do have blurred vision. I do. Yeah.
You're worrying yourself
when you can just call Peter and, you know, have a consultation and find out, or even get his book, because that's another way to – have some insight into what's going on. And what I find is that we tend as people to struggle before we just say, okay, I give up and I just want to get help. By us having these conversations, we want you to give up sooner so that you can get the answers. And tell them how to get in touch with you.
Well said. So you can reach me by telephone at it's Peter Daigle at 508-771-7444. Or you can reach me on the web at daigelelawoffice.com, and you can send me questions by linking to my website. You can also request a copy of a free book on my website, and I'll be happy to help you.
Awesome. And you did mention the copy of your book, right?
Right. Yes, you go on the website and you request a copy on the website.
Awesome. Until next time, Peter, have a wonderful day.
Okay, Catherine. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.